Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Not one time this year have we had it. And it could have happened a few times. I go back to the Arizona game. The defense was playing really well. The offense wasn't. And not one time did that defense complain about the offense not playing well. And that, I think, is speaks volumes to the character of these guys.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is the voice of the Bears head coach, Matt Nagy.
Yep.
And he is the man of the hour and a lot of fun.
Man of the year?
See him. He's the coach of the year. All right. I get out of the way. Let the wave fall over all of us. Let's enjoy it.
He's having a lot of fun yesterday, and he should. And I think that when you look at, we talked earlier before the 5 at 5, Molly, just on how it's a different vibe in town when the Bears are good and everyone can enjoy it. And I think Phil Rosenthal had an item in today's Tribune, Chicago Tribune, on page 2 of the sports section about the ratings from Sunday night. 33.7 rating, which translates into 1.1 million homes, and 52% of people with televisions in Chicago were watching the Bears.
That was the biggest game in Chicago probably since the NFC Championship game.
In 2006?
Yes.
Against the Saints?
No, I would. Didn't they make one after that?
Oh, I'm sorry, 2010.
Yes.
All right,
that was the biggest game. I mean, bigger than playoff game, because that was a measuring stick for the Bears. That was a game everybody knew how good the Rams were. And then we can sit here and talk about, the conditions and the all the problems that the Rams had that they won't have in L.A. But let me tell you something. Watching that defense dominate the Rams. First of all, it was an unbelievable week in the NFL. We saw game after game compelling, tightly contested, overtimes, upsets, the ridiculous play at the end of the New England-Miami game. I mean, we saw unbelievable stuff. But then to see the Bears shut down the Rams, I don't know. That was call your sons, call your daughters. If you were, I mean, I had friends texting like, you're watching this, right? Like, yeah, of course I'm watching it. But people were
Do you think it's
absolutely
one of those
amazed.
Games that, and I wrote this morning, and I think it's true, that people will remember, though. I mean, it's one of those ones that makes an impression. Like, from 2006 season, you remember the Bears beating the Cardinals in Arizona.
Oh,
the
sure.
comeback,
yeah.
Right? That's the kind of, that's the defining victory
had
of that season,
feel to
right?
It. That
and
was on the road.
2010, frankly, 2010, even though they ended up in the NFC Championship game, is harder for me to remember the significant signature moment of that season. To me, what Sunday night felt like was that this is the signature moment of the Bears 2018 season.
Okay, and let me say this, and I know this is going to sound like I'm not celebrating the moment, because I am, but I feel like you lose that if you lose to the Packers. I feel like the Packers game this week needs to be confirmation of what we saw on Sunday night.
Perhaps.
It needs to be avenging the 21-point fourth quarter comeback from the first game of the season. It's you need to show the progress that the franchise has made from that game, the first, Khalil Mack coming out of the gym,
sure,
and playing,
sure,
to being able to secure yourself the division title at home against your number one rival that knocked you silly during the McCarthy era, if you're being honest about it.
You want to have that mindset. That's the mentality. What you just said is exactly the way that you want Matt Nagy to address and remind his team of when they meet again tomorrow, because that's the way you have to approach this week. That said, I would just say that, an asterisk. Because when you look back, if you fast forward to, let's say, we're talking about this season in February or late February, whenever it is, when we're looking back at 2018, even if they lose to the Packers on Sunday but win a playoff game and go into – and which is still possible. It's conceivable. The Bears could lose on Sunday, still go into the playoffs, hosting a playoff game, winning a playoff sure. game, and going to L.A. or New Orleans, and,
yes.
and their season can still be considered a good one. You're going to look back at what happened Sunday night as like, that is the season. That or that is the day that represents the season to me.
I think, honestly, David, I'd go further. I think that's the day that represents the turning point – and the Matt Nagy era from
bingo
from
yes.
you know fun good team isn't this a lot of laughs
that felt like that
to serious contender
yes
and again all these guys are under contract right they don't have any draft picks but they got everybody signed so they're going to be they don't have a ton of money to spend on free agency either this is your team next year the year after that you'll have little additions here and there but they've got this team up and running. And the question is, how much better can they get?
And our challenge,
how much better can the quarterback?
And the challenge will be, and our conversation will veer toward this: is how now that the Bears have attained success, how will they handle it?
Oh, that's
because
true.
Because it's such a hard thing
before.
To get there.
Yeah.
You know, it's been so many failed experiments and bad hires
yes.
and bad signings and dumb draft picks. Now here you are, and all that cynicism was appropriate at the time, but right now this is sort of a cynic-free zone. You believe in what the Bears are doing. You're enthusiastic about how they're doing it. It's a fun team to watch. It's a fun team to cover. And Sunday night did feel like the transformation of something. Now, how do they stay there? And beating the Packers would be a good answer, first step toward proving that you know how to handle success. Because I think that everything you hear about Matt Nagy, this guy, you know, the one thing I don't know the answer to this question, so I probably shouldn't ask it, is that I'd really like to know who's advising him on how he handles these things. You know, who's advising him on some of he handles the public and the media and that part of his job really so well for a first-time head coach. He's pretty savvy that way.
How much controversy, how much adversity have they faced? You know, they had a bad loss in Miami. They had a bad loss against the Giants. You know, they lost at home
True.
Against New England.
Yeah.
You know, hey, that you know, New England's great. They came in. Now they gifted them with the special teams plays. But, you know, you didn't feel bad about it. Even losing to the Packers, at that point, starting out the season, it was more of a, wow, the Bears are really going to be good. And look, they almost beat, you know, the Packers. Now you look back at that,
you're right. There's not been much adversity when you're 9-4 and you're the surprise of the league. I guess when I think of what I'm talking about, and maybe this is just maybe, you know, our vantage point and seeing it through the prism of somebody that covers the team rather than
right.
maybe the fan. Like when you're sitting there and he goes back at a reporter who says, you know, sometimes you're worried about being too cute. And he's like, well, what's too cute? You know, he doesn't really come across as defensive. He comes across as somebody that embraces being part of the conversation and not being above it.
312-644-6767. Is there anything not to like about the job that Matt Nagy has done? Is there anything that gives you pause? We have a texter with an interesting question that we will propose when we come back from the break. He wants to know, why is it that we worry about Joe Maddon criticizing him if Pedro Strop bats and gets injured, and we don't criticize him when the defensive players are in short yardage situations? Again, they're not injured yet, but we'll discuss the difference next. Mullion Hall on the Score.
Some of them are in the incubator for a while. They're in there for weeks, and you just got to either wait for the chance to come. This one happened to be – this one just happened this past week. So it wasn't in the incubator too long, and we felt like the time was right. And, you know, that's just what the guys executed it just right. It was a great catch, great throw, good hard run sell, and I was impressed.
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of Matt Nagy. He is the head coach of the Bears, and he's talking about the premature Santa sleigh that was born at Soldier Field on Sunday. They practiced it on Friday.
They put it in on Friday. Or
how about that?
They practiced it. Not only did they practice it on Friday, they practiced it or they put it on Friday with four defensive linemen.
And again, we had a texter before the break who wanted to know why people criticize Joe over the Stropey thing and no one's criticizing Matt Nagy over using four defensive linemen. Well, number one, none of the defensive linemen got hurt. Okay,
that's a good point.
The play worked. Right?
It did work.
With the Stropey thing, you put a bat in a guy's hands who has doesn't do it, completely different thing, and then he pulls a hammy when you don't have. He's their
Stropey
closer.
Stropey was
time.
An unnatural act. Running down to first base in a dead sprint is not something pitchers ordinarily do. Right. Now, inviting collisions, getting in the way of football players is what defensive linemen do every snap. So you're not asking them to go outside of their comfort zone in a way that putting Strope at the plate and running to first base did in that example. If you're asked to compare the two, there is no comparison.
What I thought was really interesting is when they handed the ball to Akeem Hicks, and we'll talk to Akeem at 7:40, and let him score a touchdown against the Giants, that followed a week in which he couldn't practice because of an issue with his Achilles.
That's the one I thought, okay, that's where I thought the question maybe was more applicable. Coming off an injury,
yes,
putting guy in the backfield,
right?
Do you want to risk him an extra snap?
But the answer to that is that he was lined up the entire game at defensive tackle, and he was using that
he had shown
Achilles.
Now my biggest concern is Akeem going to hurt his arm so he cannot throw a touchdown pass.
I honest to God, David, it went through my head when I saw him in the backfield that they were going to like let him throw the ball. Because
that's coming.
Because I got to tell you,
it's coming.
I got this feeling that anything could happen with this guy. Anything could happen.
Yes.
Not just with Akeem, but with the play caller.
Yeah.
And I love calling him a play caller.
After Santa Slay.
Because you know what? He's a play caller. He's a play collector and a play caller.
Okay, but let's face it. You started calling him a play caller at the beginning of the season and more like, he's just the play caller. Now he's like, he's the play caller.
No. I don't believe that's accurate. I think you are reaching on that. I was referring to him as the play caller earlier in the year because I felt he was head coach slash offense and Vic Fangio was head coach slash defense.
Right.
And so when we start talking about coach of the year, one of the things that gives me a little hesitation is the fact that Matt Nagy is effectively he's head coach slash gimmick offense and Vic Fangio is head coach slash defense. He's in charge of the winning.
So have you changed it all to looking at him as...
I want Vic to be the assistant coach of the year.
Okay.
Let's create an award if it doesn't exist.
It might be, but you at some point have to acknowledge that Matt Nagy is more than just Vic Fangio's assistant coach.
He's co-head coach. I said that. I've never denied that.
He is a co-head coach. Well, let's take a call.
Let's get to the phone line. It's fun to talk about it. But that is the little splinter in my mind when you're pushing him for coach. You know, Vic kind of did well.
I'm not the only one who pushed him for coach of the year.
I know. It's a lot of people. And I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it. I'm just saying.
I'm not even pushing him.
Co-head coach.
I'm predicting.
Co-Vice President Cheney deserves some attention, too. Let's try Nick. He's in the South Loop.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Hope you're all doing well this morning. You guys made an interesting thought that kind of sparked a question in my head yesterday. You kind of loosely compared this year's Bears to the 2015 Cubs in terms of, you know, they're overachieving and they're kind of a year early in their development.
Yeah, new coach, new ideas, all sorts of things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fun.
Yeah, so
waiting for the magician, though.
Dance party?
And zoo animals.
So, hypothetically speaking, if the Bears kind of win the Super Bowl either this year or the next, you know, coming years, maybe 2 years.
When?
My question.
Nick, go ahead.
In your eyes, which rebuild would be more successful, Cubs or Bears?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I like that question because. You know, there's not an obvious answer.
Cubs. The obvious answer is the Cubs. 108 years. It's the Cubs. It's a guy in Theo.
Did he say more impressive? Which one is more impressive or more difficult?
I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
Does it matter?
More significant, the Cubs. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, the Cubs, no one had been able to do it. Theo comes in and they does it. They tear it down. They go out and get all the hitters and they buy the pitch. I mean, it's... pretty unbelievable.
Their low was deeper and further south than
the Bears are low. Don't get me wrong. But
yeah. Okay.
Marty is in justice. Good morning, Marty.
Good morning.
Hey, guys. Great show as usual.
Thank you.
I love Nagy. I love what he's doing. I think he's going to get better. But a guy who wears a golf visor in Soldier Field during the winter, you got to question his sanity a little bit.
Part of you, don't you respect that, Marty?
You know, I almost caught pneumonia once after a Bears game. years ago in the old Soldier Field. And,
but that's because you passed out drunk and slept outside for a
minute. Jägermeister and the coldest beer in the world. What are you going to do, you know? But, so I think he should go in a supply room and find himself a winter hat.
I got to tell you, we asked the question. We asked the question, what's not to like?
That's
And Marty has an answer. The visor.
The visor.
In the middle of the dead of winter, the visor makes me worry about the man's scalp.
That is who he is.
Sanity.
Yeah, be you. Part of being you is wearing the visor.
But feel free. He wore a hat.
Hey, before we get to the update, I want to not to.
I'd like to see him in a ski mask.
Belabor this. Did you hear Rich Gannon yesterday?
Let's talk about it.
We could be looking at the coach of the year in Matt Nagy. He's done a phenomenal job. First and foremost, you got to give him credit for keeping Vic Fangio on the staff. And how about these plays? You fake the football to your defensive end, Akeem Hicks. You throw it to Bradley Sowell, the tackle. I mean, the ingenuity. And look, neither quarterback played well. Mitchell Trubisky stunk to join up. It was all about monsters of the midway. I mean, look at those numbers. 3 sacks, 4 interceptions. They held the Rams to a season-low 6 points. I mean, a dominating performance. And I think you got to give Matt Nagy a lot of credit for what he's done, not just in terms of managing the whole program and the defense, but also Trubisky. I mean, he's not a Pro Bowl caliber player yet, but even on a night when he didn't play well, the Bears had the upper hand.
Interesting. I think that just reflects what's going to – you're going to hear more of that.
Rich Gannon reading David Haw is what I heard there. This segment of the Mully and Haw Show brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Gannon loves to hand out awards.
Oh, yeah.
Why does it always have to be the guy that surprises?
I don't know. Why
can't it be Sean Payton?
Well, because you expect from a guy that's won a
Bill Belichick's only won it once.
Doesn't mean they're not the best
Bill
coaches.
Belichick should win it every
year. Phil Jackson could have won it every
year. Even when he puts Gronk out on defense.
Exactly.
Okay? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Hey, we got Casey Johnson coming up, Joe. We're going to talk to him next. We'll find out what's going on with Jim Boylan and the Bulls. A lot of fun going on with that team, and we'll pick it apart a little bit with KC.
Excellent.
Banks it in!
KC Johnson.
Come and get some of this.
Bulls basketball.
Whoa! Stop it! Did not do him like that!
Taking you inside the locker room with KC Johnson.
Oh my goodness! Did you not get the memo?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the score. KC Johnson is the basketball man from the Chicago Tribune. Good morning, KC. How are you?
Hey, KC.
Good morning, guys. What's going on?
You tell us. Anything new? Anything happening around town?
It's been some long days.
I remember watching the Sylvester Stallone movie Fist, and I had a similar feeling when I heard of the Bulls issues. I thought they already had a union, but the union within the union, is that what happened? I don't know. Really a fun story.
Yeah, pretty crazy stuff. The text exchange began Saturday night. I've now found out it originally was only a select handful of players and then spread to a team-wide thing. And you don't write about that every day. You don't hear about things like that every day. So pretty remarkable first week given, I was joking with somebody last night that Fred Hoiberg's firing seems like 8 major stories ago. I mean, and it, usually when you have a coach firing, that kind of is the dominant storyline for a while, but Jim's come in, obviously feeling not only true to himself, but emboldened by a organizational mandate to affect change, and this is how he's going about trying to do it.
So, Casey, we were both there yesterday when Jim Boylan talked before the game, and I understood what he was trying to do and respect what he's trying to say and accomplish. And then you made the comment, I don't know, I didn't talk to you after the game, but I wonder if it still applies. You made the comment that Sunday was a very big day and it could be actually turn out to be a good day for the Bulls, given everything that was put out there on the table, given how open everybody was about whatever they had to share. Do you still feel like Sunday was a positive step, even though it might have been a painful one for the Bulls?
I do. Well, what I mean by that is they were certainly as a team, and even from Jim Boylan down to the most disgruntled player, they were in a much better place Sunday night than they were on Saturday night, unquestionably. Mm-hmm. And you're hearing that not only privately but publicly. Post game last night, Zach LaVine talked about how that was a good thing because it brought the team closer together. Everybody got everything off their chest and they need to get off their chest. Everybody was able to say hard things to each other. Everybody was transparent. And he feels it will bring the team closer. Now, what I also said when you and I were walking into the United Center last night is now it's got to take hold. I mean, you start stacking, you know, 30-point halves where you get outscored 63-33 on top of each other, and that's gonna you know, send everything over the apple cart again. Maybe not to that extent, but it's got to take hold now. You got to start seeing some tangible results on the court.
Did you see anything last night? I mean, I actually thought the first half it was very impressive. I know that the third quarter went to hell quickly, but they seemed like they were competing and playing pretty well. And I again, you know, having watched all these games, it's much more attractive style when they're actually attempting to play well.
Yeah, and playing hard, right? Yeah. I mean, yeah, no, that first half, I mean, Jim talked about it, players talked about it. It was a different team. I mean, they were committed. They were sharing the ball. They were defending. They were rebounding. They were finishing their defense. And you felt like you were going to get one of those wins where not only did you respond to a 56-point loss, but you responded to the tumultuous events of the previous 24 hours or 48 hours since it started Saturday night. And to me, a little bit, and it's one game, but a little bit of a troubling aspect to that second half collapse is you also, not only have you not really gotten a new coach bounce, you also, again, it's just one game, but you didn't get the new player bounce. I mean, Dunn and Portis are back last night. Now you're kind of like, this is what we've been waiting for. We're trying to get to full strength. Obviously, except for Denzel Valentine, who's out for the year. And you get outscored that badly in the second half. And again, I know Dunn and Portis are on minutes restrictions. It's only one game. The guys don't have their rhythm, their conditioning. Those players were rusty, but that was a little troubling given that, you know, you've got all these storylines set up to say, all right, here we are. We're back to full strength. We've had this thing that was in the public and was messy, and we're better for it. And you get outscored 63-33 in the second half. That's not a good sign.
Casey, I think I said this earlier that, you know, the front office has accumulated the talent. They have the core pieces they believe they can win with down the road. Now it's a matter of trying to sharpen the edge and get the approach and work on the mindset, the mentality, and that's what Jim Boylan is here to do. And when you hear him say things like he's working for the Reinsdorfs, and he's it's very freeing to know he can coach with passion and emotion and directness. Is there any doubt that he has the full front office backing in what he's doing and how he's doing it?
Not one bit. And yeah, I mean, that is to me the biggest storyline that I'm glad you're talking about it, because I feel like it's getting a little bit underplayed here. I mean, not only – I keep saying this is who this guy is, so he'd be acting this way regardless, but he may – and I don't know this. Only he can answer this. But he may be even going to the nth degree with his own true personality because of how emboldened he feels. He's been told to affect change. It's as simple as that. And he's been told that with an organizational mandate from people that pay him and are higher than him on the food chain. So this isn't going away. This is not some act. I mean, not only has he waited for this chance for two decades as a longtime career assistant, he's seen as the lead assistant what he feels are some things he wants to change that happened under Fred Hoiberg's watch. And management has seen those same things, or else Fred Hoiberg would be the coach still. So this is not going away. I personally don't know if this intensity, the public part of the intensity, can last. Now, one thing that was important that I thought was told to me yesterday was everything that Jim has said publicly, he has said to the players privately. And that is important because, you know, Zach LaVine had the one public comment, which I also thought got underplayed a little bit. It was pretty astonishing for its frankness. Zach said no player should ever have their toughness questioned. And that is the crux of the issue. And if a coach is doing that publicly without saying so first privately, that's to me even worse. But it's still clear, since Jim is saying those things privately to players, that it's still clear that bothers at least Zach LaVine, and I know more because it was brought up directly in the team meeting on Sunday.
There are so many players involved in this and so many interesting stories connected to all of them. We talked this morning about the idea that of all the guys connected to this, whose status is the most interesting and why. And there were, you know, everyone kind of agreed Zach LaVine because of the contract, and he's the guy with the money, so you follow the money in these situations. But I think that Lopez is really interesting because he wasn't included initially because everyone knew that he'd be too good a guy about it. And Holiday is really interesting because I think his perception of himself as NBA player versus maybe the reality of his situation on this team and the fact that other people might be interested in him. You know, I don't know, Casey, is he part of the core or is he a guy that they are going to trade? So it just seems like he might end up in a much better situation as a result of not necessarily buying into this.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought of the Holiday aspect, but that's an intriguing point, Molly. As far as to your question, he's, you know, all signs point to him being elsewhere, if not next season, even might possibly by February. So, you know, that's the position the Bulls feel like they want to upgrade, even though Justin's having a fantastic year. They feel like they want to upgrade that starting three. So, yeah, that's an intriguing one. We talked to Justin. We finally caught up to him. I mean, there's been so many people to talk to. We finally caught up to him pregame last night. And, you know, he just said the meeting was important because of what other players had said that, you know, allowed the guys the chance to get things off their chest. And, you know, I was told that the meeting was pretty emotional at times. Like, Zach and Justin led it, according to Wendell Carter Jr. and according to some of the sources that I talked to that were at the meeting. And Zach was incredibly emotional at times. I mean, it's clear that Zach, you know, I mean, with that comment alone, the freedom that he had under Fred Hoiberg to you know, now it's clear that Zach is chafing a little bit with this. And, you know, how he responds to it and how the Bulls respond to it will be something we'll be watching.
So they're off to Mexico City, KC, and Jim Boylan talked about that being an opportunity for one of these maybe bonding experiences and looked at a road trip with a young team as an opportunity. What do you expect this trip to produce, and are you looking forward to getting to Mexico City? I mean, you've had a long week.
Bring your passport.
Yeah, it's funny because usually like these international games, they're called these NBA global games, they're big events. Adam Silver will be there for media availability on Wednesday. They're usually kind of fun. I mean, I feel like it's like a normal beat day now because, like, you just got to get to work and find out what happened. I mean, there's just so much craziness lately. So they're going to practice here in Chicago today, fly tonight, practice in Mexico City tomorrow. So games are usually pretty fun. But, this is a tough trip. I mean, Orlando's obviously improved this season, and then they go on to San Antonio, where I don't know if you guys had heard, but Jim Boylan worked for Greg Popovich once, so that'll be Saturday's game, and then they finish Monday at OKC. So this is a tough three-game trip, and maybe it is good for them to get away a little bit, but, you know, craziness travels too, so we'll see what happens.
So Dunn and Portis back, each getting 9 points yesterday. We talk about a Parker and what is his role, and he was playing some small forward at one point. Where does he fit in? How will the rotation work? When will the starting lineup change? How quickly will all of these things come to fruition?
All great questions. You know, I found it amazing, and I guess he was just trying to have some – I don't know if he was having some fun with us or what, but I asked Jim at Shooter on yesterday, you know, what is this a one-game thing for Dunn like it was for Lowry? He goes – and I said, you know, will he be the starter? And he said, well, that's something I can see happening. You know, like, I mean, come on, Ryan Arcidiacono is going to start over Chris Dunn? That's not happening. So I assume that'll be sooner rather than later. I don't think Chris was that great last night. And Chris said at Shoot-Around that his knee, you know, wasn't – he said it was. He was ready to play, but he said over the weekend he had a little bit of some funkiness that he wasn't expecting. So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe he comes off the bench one more time, but he'll eventually be the starter. Yeah, and you know, different roles are going to happen now. And to answer your question, Molly, I don't know Jim's rotation yet. I don't think Jim knows his rotation yet. I mean, he went 11 deep last night, used Hutchinson in the second half after Lopez played well in the first half with a smaller lineup. Parker was at the three-some. Parker's role diminished considerably last night. So there's a lot to sort through right here, and this is what I'm talking about. You know, the positivity off that Sunday needs to take hold, and there's going to be more challenges because now, you know, if the losing starts piling up and the roles change, there's always stuff to monitor, no doubt.
All righty, KC. Thank you, buddy. Great
safe
catching
travels.
Up. Yeah,
good
safe
stuff.
Travels is right.
All right, appreciate it, guys. Take care.
That's our guy, KC Johnson, the basketball man from the Chicago Tribune. And it's always good to talk to KC. I mentioned the football man because Biggs' time is next.
That's coming up.
We're going to bring in Brad Biggs, and we'll talk to him about where the Bears are after the big win against L.A. and how important is it to come back here and beat the Packers. And I also want to ask him about the Rams. The Rams have two losses now, and they are both on the road to the teams that are also contenders in the NFC, right? They've lost to the Saints in the Superdome and to the Bears in Soldier Field, and they've got to seal up some stuff themselves. They play the Eagles this week, make sure that they don't have to go on the road again. They're probably in dire need of being at home against either of those two teams, and we'll find out if Biggsy thinks that's possible. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.